It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Come Everything on. Gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Come Everything gon' get devoured, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the
field. Let's freaking go. A very
happy Juneteenth to each and every one of you on a glorious day to be an LSU Tiger fan. Today, we're going to talk about the SEC quarterback hierarchy. Where does Garrett Nussmeier rank in the Southeastern Conference going into next year? As you guys saw, LSU this past year did have the best quarterback in the SEC, and it led them to a 10-3 mark. Well, technically a 9-3 mark, but that's not here nor there. And yeah, life is pretty good for your boy. I've had an awesome, awesome day today. And look, I hope you did as well as we continue to grow PHL. I've gotten so many messages lately about some of our coverage. I really appreciate that. And look, I feel as if the SEC world is going to be introduced to a bunch of new quarterbacks this year. The one thing Garrett Nussmeier has over all the other first-year starting quarterbacks is experience. So many of the SEC quarterbacks going into next year that have a lot of hype. A guy by the name of Jackson Arnold of Oklahoma, we're going to play him this next year. A guy by the name of Nico Imelaveava. They're only going to be year two starters as first year starters. You're only going to be a sophomore, if you will. And because of the COVID year, instead of doing freshman, sophomore, junior, I do year one, year two, year three, year four. Okay. So the truth is we already get a super chat in from Devin. All the question marks with this team. We'll talk about that coming up as well. Also a huge, and I mean absolutely massive, recruitment will end tomorrow. We'll talk about that as well. So for me, Garrett Nussmeier is in my top five quarterbacks. And we use this graphic quite a bit. It's from a good friend of mine and a former PHL guest. A lot of you know him from Saturday Down South. His name is Chris Marler. So these were his quarterback rankings. And he had Garrett Nussmeier at number 7 and Quinn Ewers number 1 overall. The way I see it, Garrett Nussmeier is the number 3 quarterback in the SEC. Carson Beck is my number 1. Jackson Dart is my number 2. Garrett Nussmeier is my number 3. And Quinn Ewers is probably my number 4. But I am more willing to push Quinn Ewers a little bit down than people would like to think. I think Jalen Milroe holds onto the football too long, takes a lot of bad sacks, but obviously out of any of these guys, he is by far the best runner, and he probably has the best arm, either him or Nico, and you can make a case for a few others on this list. But at this point in time, I have Carson Beck a little bit higher than everyone else. Than most. I think there's a little bit of gap between him and everybody else. But for people who really love them, some college football, the guy who is in the best situation going into next year is Jackson Dart. There is no doubt in my mind. And you can even make a case that Jackson Dart's numbers are going to be even better now that Ole Miss lost Quinshon Judkins, right? Which would mean Lane is less likely to run the football this year, even though Ole Miss's offense is more of a run-based attack. I think going into next year, my number one rated receiver is at Ole Miss, Trey Harris. Caden Priesthorn is a really good tight end for Ole Miss. He's back. Ole Miss brings in Juice Wells. So I think I'd have to put Jackson Dart ahead of Garrett Nussmeier. But Garrett Nussmeier is my number three quarterback in the SEC. And it's bold to say that because nobody would have Garrett Nussmeier in their top three because most people's top three is going to be some combination of Quinn Ewers, Jackson Dart, and Carson Beck. Now, Quinn Ewers is still relatively young. He's entering year four as a year three starter. So most people project him to take a massive leap this next year. We'll see what happens. You know, Jonte Cook's good player. Isaiah Bond is really freaking good. I think Amari Nyblack is underrated. And as we well know, Steve Sarkisian schemes tight ends better than pretty much anyone. So I really, really, really do believe Garrett Nussmeier is the number three SEC quarterback. Now, the guy who is on the thumbnail is my biggest sleeper. And I think there is a higher likelihood than what we would probably think at this point that Connor Wigman is the number one NFL draft prospect going into next year. Now, if you want to talk about a bold claim, now that's one. But as many of you know, I'm used to making those. So Connor Wigman, I think, is the biggest sleeping giant out of any of them. And I do think he is very, very, very good. But the two guys that I feel are overrated, which means these two are going to be in New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. I'm kidding. But the two quarterbacks I'm fading the most, Quinn Ewers and Jalen Milroe. I just don't know how Jalen Milroe is going to fit in with this new offense that Alabama will be running next year. One guy who doesn't get enough respect is Brady Cook out of Missouri. You want to talk about great weapons? Well, he's got Luther Burden back. Great offensive-minded coach. They kept their offensive coordinator, so there's a lot of continuity. And the one thing Brady Cook has over everybody else in the Southeastern Conference is Missouri has by far the easiest schedule in the SEC. And I do not think it's close. Out of all 16 teams in the SEC, Missouri, best schedule in the SEC. Now, are they the best team in the SEC? No. Are they even a top five team in the SEC going into next year? I would say no. I would have Georgia ahead of them. I would have Texas. I would have Alabama. I would have LSU. And I would have Ole Miss. And probably Tennessee over Missouri. But they should be pretty good. We'll see how they do now that their workhorse has gone to the San Francisco 49ers. And we'll see how they do now that Blake Baker's gone and all their really, really good defensive pieces are gone. Hopper's gone and so on and so on. But Brady Cook is underrated. I do think he's good. I feel one weakness for him is his pocket movement. I don't think he has the best feel in the world for the pocket. I think he'll run into a few sacks here or there. I think Graham Mertz is fine. I see one of our sharp viewers, Gabe Davis, in there. He likes DJ Lagway a lot. There are some that think DJ Lagway could win the job at some point this year. Jackson Arnold, of course, is the five-star can't-miss guy. He's probably the highest-rated prospect on this list outside of Quinn Ewers, who was a number one overall recruit when he came out. So, yeah, I mean, Jackson Arnold has a lot of hype going into next year. And then, of course, the rest of the SEC. I think Blake Shapen of Mississippi State is very interesting as a deep sleeper. He's from Shreveport, Louisiana. Lenore Sellers at South Carolina is very interesting. Probably the most athletically gifted quarterback in the SEC is Arkansas's quarterback, Talen Green. Auburn, I think, might have the worst quarterback in the SEC outside of Vanderbilt. With a year six guy coming in who was just not good. I thought he'd be a little bit better, Peyton Thorne. But he does return, and he does have Cam Coleman, the true freshman sensation that he'll be playing alongside. Brock Vandegrift is also someone else, a former five-star recruit at Kentucky. Can he play? Now he's going to get the opportunity to run his offense. So we pretty much covered everyone there. So let me know. Let me know in the comments section below. Who do you believe is the best quarterback in the SEC? Type Y for yes, type N for no in the live chat right now. Or if you're driving around listening to this on SpyTunes, iTunes, or Spotify, give me answer to yourself if you're driving around. Who you think the best quarterback is in the SEC? Type Y for yes, type N for no in the live chat, though, if you think it is Garrett Nussmeier. Okay. Let's go to our first super chat. And it goes from Devin. LSU can't overlook USC. Lots of question marks with this team. I will tell you this, Devin. In the history of football, there will never be an elite team, an elite program like LSU that will overlook a season opener until we actually win one of these damn things. I mean, I don't think LSU is overlooking Tennessee for, I say Tennessee, USC for a few reasons. Number one, week two is the weakest game on LSU's schedule versus Nichols. So there is no overlooking USC with Nichols. Normally, if you're overlooking an opponent, there's a big game around the corner. That is not the case. Nichols will be a walkthrough. But I think when you say overlook, you can also mean, well, take them lightly. Because going into both the Florida State games, you would need to have been sleeping under a rock to not see that Florida State was good. You know, the last couple of summers has just been me repeatedly telling you guys how good Florida State was. And in both seasons, Florida State had elite years, the best that they've had literally since the Jameis year, both of them. So it's pretty insane how good Florida State was as a team. USC as a team isn't as good. But I get what you're saying about overlooking, because you can overlook a team if you're 7.5-point favorites over USC like LSU is right now. But until we win another season opener, I do not think in the history of mankind LSU will ever overlook a season opener after this hellacious stretch that we have been on losing season openers, obviously since 2019 LSU. Now, the second part is very much a thing. There are a surreal amount of question marks surrounding LSU. Surreal. So, and we'll go through them all. Offensively, running back depth is something that sticks out to you. Can LSU develop a second tight end? Maybe Mac Markway steps up. And if you can, will LSU run more 12 personnel groupings? Obviously, another big question mark will be DJ Chester. It makes you a lot more comfortable that he did get those high leverage snaps versus Missouri last year. But DJ Chester, of course, is a question mark going into next year. And then, obviously, every receiver outside of Kyren Lacy. And even Kyren has the overall number one option. There are some that feel sketchy about that. I feel a little bit more comfortable with Kyren going into next year than most. I think Kyren is close to being in the special LSU wide receiver category. I think he might not be Malik Nabers, but he could be a Reuben Randall type of playmaker for LSU. Now, obviously the big question marks are on the defensive side of the football, and all three levels of the defense have massive question marks. And the truth here, and this is a little bit tough to take in, every single position on the LSU defense is a question mark at this point. Literally every single one. That's not to say that we don't feel comfortable about any of our defensive players. That's just not true. There are some guys that some of us like, and there are obviously a lot of guys on this team that are coming back that we feel heebie-jeebie about. But the truth is, this LSU defense should be better just by the the sheer coaching upgrades that everyone will be, you know, taking in. Now, I am kind of glad that you bring up the question marks, Devin, because I didn't talk about this yesterday. And, you know, when you're doing an off season and you're still doing the same amount of shows, there are some topics that I save for other shows. But it was interesting. Pete Jenkins gave an interview, I believe it was Jacques Doucet, and he was talking about the personnel in the LSU defensive tackle room. And, you know, it is concerning considering he was in the defensive line room last year, Pete Jenkins, and he was, you know, a consultant. You know, it does make you feel like, man, if he doesn't feel comfortable about it and he was in that room, why should I feel comfortable about it? And the truth is, there's a lot of merit to his claims. I don't think anybody on LSU staff feels overly comfortable about their defensive tackle depth. I think they will say that they feel comfortable because of some of the portal guys that they brought in. But, you know, it is concerning. And that, of course, will be the biggest question mark going into next year is the defensive tackle play. And obviously, as we all know, the defensive tackle play has a huge impact on your linebacker play. And LSU will be working with, yet again, a new off-ball linebacker combination with Harold Perkins and Greg Penn. So, really freaking excited about that. And thank you so much for your super once again. I feel like we will eventually give this card out. First $25 super chat, we'll give out this Drew Brees card. I think we're going to get there pretty easily today on the Wednesday night live stream. All right. Let's go to Gabe. Should be playing the tune-up game week 0 or 1. Not a fan of the tough game at the start. I would say I'm a little bit of a bigger fan of it now that it is a 12-team playoff. But, you know, if we're being completely honest, let's just say LSU would have beaten Florida State. And let's just say LSU beat Florida State. They only lost to Ole Miss. And they ended up winning the SEC championship. There would have been no way the committee would have found a way to put LSU in over Florida State. So with the 14 playoff, that would have had LSU out of the college football playoff. But now with the 12-team playoff, you can work around a loss a little bit easier. Okay? So, here's what I'll say. There is no reason to play a difficult season opener. There is absolutely no reason. And if I were involved with the LSU Brain Trust, I would make sure that my team never played a difficult week one game. And it has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with being scared. It has everything to do with being smart. But LSU has made it clear that their brand is going to be a bold brand. They aren't backing out of week one difficult games. This is something that LSU has always done, predating the Ed Orgeron tenure. They're always going to play difficult week one games. That's just how it works. Okay? And also LSU, and this is something that I am in favor of. Don't think it's the absolute smartest thing to do, but I am in favor of. LSU wants a 9-game conference schedule. That's what they want. They want a 9-game conference schedule. Okay? 9 games. It's not good for really anyone to go to a 9-game conference schedule. The only people that win is you, because we get more great games throughout the season. And I'm a regular season purist. I feel we should respect all our sports regular seasons a little bit more, other than constantly telling every sports fan that it doesn't mean anything. So I really, really, really love a 9-game conference schedule, and LSU does as well. But it's not what the rest of the SEC wants, and I'm not sure if we're ever going to get it. But that's LSU's brand. They have consistently told everyone, we will play anyone, anytime, anywhere. Other schools are not like that. USC is not like that. USC is trying to get out of Ole Miss. USC is trying to soften their schedule, which is a smart thing to do. But that's not what fans want. It's not good for the game. We want difficult out-of-conference matchups. So I share all of that with you. LSU is one of four teams this year that will be playing difficult season opening games. All right. In other words, a game versus a Power 5 team. Actually, it's five. Vanderbilt plays Virginia Tech in week one. Texas A&M plays Notre Dame in week one. LSU plays USC in week one. Georgia plays Clemson in week one. And Florida plays Miami in week one. There is one big difference, though, is LSU is the only team that has to travel. Now, Georgia is traveling. However, Georgia is playing their week one game versus Clemson in Atlanta. Okay, that's a very easy trip. It's 30 minutes from Athens. And obviously, most of Georgia's fans are in Atlanta anyway. LSU's going to the West Coast. All the other teams are getting to play this week one game at home. It is so hard as a coach to not know anything about your team until the bullets actually fly. And you really don't know anything until you're playing an actual game. Now, you know what Will Campbell and Emory Jones are going to give you in a week one game. You know Garrett Nussmeier and Kyron Lacy are going to go for at least 70 yards of connections. You know Nuss is going to give you at least a 250, 275 spot. But outside of that, it's really hard to project anything. So it is an age-old debate, but LSU is not budging. They're keeping Clemson on the schedule. They're not budging. Now, if you want to get into a real schedule debate, I have no idea why the Florida Gators aren't scrambling to change their schedule format. You are not good anymore. You are not an elite program anymore. Quit scheduling like you're Georgia. I mean, Florida is legit just, you know, doomsdaying themselves with Miami to start the year, UCF also on the schedule, and you have to close the year versus Florida State. And that does not include Georgia still being on your schedule, Tennessee still being on your schedule. Florida also has to play Texas. I mean, this is the hardest final 5 weeks I have ever seen in the history of the SEC. Florida's closing the year. Georgia in Jacksonville, at Texas, LSU at home, Ole Miss at home, and then at Florida State. Those are four teams that will all finish in the top 25 next year. I mean, five teams. So basically 30 minutes away. LSU should be an honorary Big Ten member this year. Crazy, they're playing both LA teams. That is true. But we had a Dex. He was the one that made the PHO open that you guys compliment me on all the time. It's good to see Lisi Dex Productions in here. Once again, if you need your wedding shot, if you need a promotional thing shot, Lisi Dex is a place to go. I'll get you in connection. And he shoots the absolute best. He's got a master's from USC. Let's see. Some breaking news here. Okay, according to Ross Dellinger, we are looking soon at an expansion of the NCAA basketball tournament. It's gross that we have 68 teams in this thing. And I know a lot of you love March Madness, but expansion is coming to all playoffs. 12 is not enough. You got to get 14. Next thing you know, it's going to be 24 teams in the damn playoff. But I'll let y'all take that in. NCAA basketball tournament expanding. Type Y for yes, type N for no if you're loving that. We got some drafting going on in here. Okay. Chance. A lot of you are all in on the nose. Anytime I hear the word sports and expansion, I'm against it. I'm against it. I get excited when they add teams. I'm okay with adding teams. But expansion, anything, eh. And honestly, almost every single playoff in the past 5 years has expanded. MLB, we're throwing a fifth team in there. NBA, play-in game. NFL, expand to 6-7. NCAA basketball tournament, expansion. NCAA football tournament, expansion. Got to keep expanding. I'm telling you right now, our addiction to postseasons and playoffs is why we hate our sports leagues so much. NBA ratings still in the tank. And it's not because of politics. There's not really been any kind of political thing since the bubble. The ratings are not good. Now, it's the first time in years that they've not drawn or whatever. I don't even know what the number is. Why? The playoffs last too damn long. They last way too damn long. Not every series needs a 7-game format. It's coming for college football. We'll be at 14 before you know it. We'll be there at 14 before you know it. Tari says the super chat's not working. I'm sorry about that, man. Venmo Cash App also works at Carter the Power. That the NHL stays at 16. Now, why on a glorious day would we bring up hockey? Why would we bring up hockey? I do find it interesting that Houston Oilers girl that flashed everyone went on that viral video. Like every Oilers female fan is going viral right now. There's probably people watching Oilers hockey for the first time, and they're like, "Wait, does every female Oilers fan?" Let them loose. But yeah, apparently there is the Stanley Cup is still going on. Euro soccer going on like that. It's crazy. The best tournament, the biggest tournament in the world. World Cup expansion. Okay. It is inevitable that every single playoff expands. Every single one of them. Tari, thank you so much for your super. I really appreciate that, man. You get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. Tari sent me a 10 spot. Now, if all 86 of you sent me a 10 spot, I would be feeling a lot better about life. But Tari, you get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. Jordan, one of our biggest supporters, Brandon Ayuk rumors to Washington. I will say this. As long as Jaden and Brandon Ayuk will be in the league, there will always be Jaden and Brandon Ayuk rumors. It is just their best friends, and they do not hide it. You know, Brandon Ayuk was wearing a Jaden for Heisman shirt. They want to play together on the same team. They just do. So can there be a deal done to get Brandon Ayuk to Washington? It would make sense for both parties, and honestly would. But we'll see what happens. I'll tell you this. So we do have a few super diehard underdog drafters in here. I am drafting Jaden Daniels in every single fantasy underdog league I'm in. He is so damn cheap for what he's going to do to the NFL next year. And if you sign up now, underdog, you get a promo code Carter. You get a deposit match bonus. And I'm drafting a lot of Jaden Daniels, a lot, an obscene amount, because I just think he is going to be an unreal fantasy quarterback next year. Let's go to Tari Super Chat. Carter, how often is it for a league-worst defense to make a huge leap in the next year? This is a very, very good question. It's honestly not really that difficult at all. It's really not. And I could make a very strong case. It is a lot easier to do it on defense than it is on offense. Now, what I'm going to do, Tari, is give you multiple layers because you did Super Chat. And I want to say thank you. Everyone show some love to Tari in here. All right. The first thing is LSU this next year really needs their special teams to take another leap. All right. So a lot of you know Slade Roy, the deep snapper for LSU. We are huge fans of his. He is my favorite player on the team. Right. He's very nice to us folks, and I love me some Slade Roy. And he's a really good deep snapper. And, you know, he promised each and every one of you that these special teams would be better. All right. So Coach Polian leaves, and our special teams was better. We went from being absolutely dreadful in the first year under Brian Kelly. And in year two under Brian Kelly, we became solid on special teams. We were solid. And we also had the benefit of not really needing our special teams. And I'll make this point until I'm blue in the face. Our defense was so bad. We had such a high touchdown rate on defense. We rarely needed to punt return. And because we scored so many touchdowns, we rarely needed to punt. So as both of those things will regress, our defense will become better. We'll get more stops, thus needing more punt returns. And our offense will probably not be as good, thus meaning more punts and more field goals. Our special teams is going to have to be better. And I think the most underrated question, okay, and we did get another super chat. We'll get to you next, Ben. The most underrated, and I mean it, underrated LSU addition was bringing in a punter, the Louisiana Tech transfer, who's originally from Michigan. Bring them in for some competition at punter because we've got to have a good punter this next year to flip field position. So for our defense to get better, our special teams need to get better. It just does because we're just going to be more reliant on that. And if we get better punting, guess what? Field position helps our defense out in a major way. So now we get to the actual crux of your question. It can happen pretty quickly. So part of the reason why I was very bullish on Blake Baker to get the job is he already did this a few years ago. So the San Francisco 49ers defensive coordinator got fired this offseason, and his name is Steve Wilks. The last time he was a defensive coordinator was at Missouri. All right, so when he was at Missouri, Steve Wilks pulled a Bo Pelini. Now, Steve Wilks is not a bad defensive coordinator. Probably a better head coach than he is defensive coordinator. But at Missouri, he sucked. He was just terrible. I mean, everybody was running it up on Missouri. So Blake Baker came in, and in year one, changed it. And then this past year, his defense was elite. Missouri's defense was one of the 10 best defenses in all of college football, and a lot of those guys got drafted. So I understand it's a smallish sample size, but the last 3 years, Blake Baker has been a coach. He has been elite. When he was the LSU linebackers coach, he was elite. He almost had a Butkus Award winner. The 2 years he was a defensive coordinator in Missouri, he was really good. He only had, to me, one bad game. So in 26 opportunities to be a defensive coordinator, Blake Baker only had one bad game when you adjust for competition. All right? I don't give a damn that Jaden Daniels ran all over Missouri. He did that versus literally everyone. So, you know, I think Blake Baker can flip it a little bit quicker. The difference, though, is you can make a case that Missouri had better players, especially in their first unit defensively, than we do going into next year. You know, he had Rake Straw, who was really good. He had Abrams Drain, who was really good. He had Tyrone Hopper, who was really good. So he had good players. You know, the players were there. They just need a better scheme. Honestly, Tari, comes down to how well do you feel about the talent that LSU has on their team going into next year defensively? I feel fine with it. I do. I would say fine is where I am. I'm always going to be somewhat optimistic because LSU is my favorite team, but it is concerning. And look, I'm literally, Tari, concerned about every single LSU defensive player. I really am. Even the ones that we think are solid, because there is some tinkering that's going to be happening with every single one of the players. You know, one thing LSU really needs is Deshaun Womack to pay off. You need a guy like Braden Swinson to continue his high level of play. PFF really liked Braden Swinson last year. I might be a little bit cooler on him. You know, PFF had Braden Swinson as a top three edge in the entire SEC last year. But I do like Swinson. I do. So, you know, I'm getting there because I am very Blake Baker bullish. Obviously, a lot of you know the story about when he was hired. You know, we kind of shared it, you know, on PHL that he would more than likely be the guy. And that was, you know, the day that House was fired. But, you know, I'm really excited about Blake Baker, and I'm really excited about Kevin Peoples and Bo Davis up front. And we'll see what Jake Olson is able to do as a young safeties coach, along with obviously the great Corey Raymond. So we'll see. Danny says overall her defensive rating for the players is about 2.5 out of 5 stars. So there you go. So we get Ben with the super chat. Ben says he's one of my Arkansas viewers. He's a big supporter of the Power Hour SEC channel. He said, just supporting, sir, go Hawks, but since you supered, let's talk a little bit about Arkansas really, really quickly. Okay. You know, LSU plays Arkansas this year, and they get him in a relatively good spot. The thing about the Arkansas game that's going to be weird is Arkansas will have a massive rest advantage. They do have a bye week before LSU, and we are having to travel there. And Arkansas, when it comes to their schedule, their biggest game every year is against LSU. So they circle that game on the schedule, and that is their Super Bowl. And for LSU fans, it's just another game. And that does concern me. LSU will have, you know, a night game versus Ole Miss that they'll be playing the week before. And they'll be in a little bit of a look-ahead spot because they have Texas A&M on the road the very next week. So that's a tough spot. But, you know, my thoughts on Arkansas has grown. My feel on Arkansas has grown a little bit. I do think they have some nice defensive pieces. They have an ascending defense coordinator going into year two. You know, they bring back Bobby Petrino. I do think the most underrated player in the SEC at the running back position is Jaquindon Jackson, the Utah transfer who initially was a Texas Longhorn and initially a quarterback. I think he's really good. I really do. I don't think he is special when it comes to like a home run hitter type of player, but he is really good. He's just been very injured. And Utah's running back room is loaded. And Jared makes a really good point here. So he attended the last game in Arkansas, and he'll be attending it this year as well. Last time we played Arkansas was icy. This time it probably won't be as cold because we won't be playing them in November. We'll be playing them in mid-October. So there you go. Let's go to Chance here. What's the blue chip ratio of those Missouri defensive players? Probably not that high. I would say probably, and for those that don't know, a blue chip ratio is the ratio of four stars on your team compared to overall players on your roster. So LSU's blue chip ratio normally, and it's just scholarship players on the roster, it's normally around 65-ish, so that's about two out of every three. I'd say Missouri's blue chip ratio was probably in like the 30s or 40s, probably somewhere around there. I know Chris Abrams' dream was once an LSU commitment. And normally the sign if a player that decommits from LSU is going to be good, like him, is when they decommit, they say, I am decommitting from the University of Louisiana State. That is normally a sign that that kid's going to go off at the other school. And lo and behold, he did. So there you go. But yeah, the super chats are flying via Cash App today. I appreciate that. Let's keep them going. Who are the difference makers on defense outside of Harold Perkins? Do we even have an idea who it might be? So we mentioned Braden Swinson a minute ago. He is older and he should be a difference maker. And look, there's a lot of questions about Harold Perkins, you know, with the new, you know, position as the off-ball linebacker. I really do think, and, you know, we were talking about the season openers. I do think there was an overreaction to Harold Perkins' off-ball linebacker play versus Florida State. There was a bit of an overreaction, and I think that heavily affected Matt House. So this is my theory behind it. LSU, all last offseason, they were heavily relying on Omar Spates and Harold Perkins to be the dudes as off-ball linebackers. LSU spent a lot of time and resources to get Omar Spates in. Then you had Greg Penn as the number three guy, and then Harold Perkins, off-ball linebacker. And they had a really good spring game. They had really good practices together. And then the Florida State game happened. All right. Florida State is the worst offense to face off against if you have inexperienced linebackers because they run a lot of counter. Counter is very difficult to defend if you aren't used to seeing it, if you're not used to pulling guards and play action and all of that. And they basically toyed with their off-ball linebackers. They really did. And LSU decided to just blow it up. They decided, hey, this isn't going to work. Harold Perkins, this isn't his good spot. Harold Perkins had a bad game. And then after that, we're trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do? So Matt House, who's not already a great defensive coordinator, he's also a linebackers coach. He's got to figure this out. With no real defensive line coach, it was a lot on his plate. What I want to happen this year versus USC, another tough offense to go off against in week one, is don't bail on it. If you are training Harold Perkins to be a traditional off-ball linebacker and it doesn't work, I do think you need to stick with it a little bit longer. A one-game sample is not enough. Okay? A one-game sample is just not enough. So I hope we stick with it if that's what we want to do. Now, if they change your mind, so be it. Bullfrog follows up and says, Swinson is definitely a difference maker. Hope you're right. Definitely. Yeah, I could get there. I'm fine. Yeah, I think his floor is relatively high. I think we'll get a good defensive end out of Brayden Swinson this year. I think Major Burns playing closer to the line of scrimmage is a difference maker. It's a bit of a stretch here. Jarden Gilbert. I like Jarden Gilbert. I do. Whit Weeks is definitely someone I like a lot. The issue is Whit Weeks is not a starter. Now, it doesn't mean he doesn't play a big role, but historically, LSU's off-ball linebacker rotation has been tight. But we'll see. We'll see. You know, I do like Whit Weeks a lot, and there is a piece of me that wishes he was starting. All right, there is a piece of me that wishes that was the case. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I think Kevin Peoples is really underrated in this entire discussion because there's so much focus on the LSU off-ball linebackers and Blake Baker, and there's so much focus on the defensive tackle room. But the defensive end room, I mean, it's stacked. I mean, there are a lot of bodies in there. So we'll see. We'll see. Now, one guy that we've not discussed, and I'll just admit it, you know, I like Ahmad Bro a lot. You know, I have close tie to Ruston. I spent a lot of time in Ruston. And Ahmad Bro was one of my favorite interviews and one of my favorite hangs with any LSU Tiger. And I was going through, I was like, man, what about historically? How many, like, defensive ends his size that bulked up turned out to be good LSU defensive tackles? And the answer is actually a little bit better. Now, some of this is inaccurate data to me, but I did go back and I gave a look-see at guys that were labeled as defensive ends who bulked up and became defensive tackles at LSU. One name is Michael Brockers. Brockers had a bigger frame, and you know, the whole time everyone thought he was going to be a defensive tackle. And obviously Michael Brockers just retired and great NFL player, great LSU Tiger. And then Devon Godchow was labeled as a defensive end. I think most people thought he was going to be a DT, and he turned out to be pretty good. So obviously Ahmad Bro's frame isn't as big as those guys. And those guys are just better players. But neither one of those guys were like elite recruits, right? And Ahmad Bro obviously isn't either. So maybe Ahmad Bro bulks up and can give you something. It's a lot to ask for year one. And maybe year two or year three, he can do something for LSU. But that's a stretch. Gabriel Relaford is also someone I've gotten to know a little bit, and I'm really excited about him and what he did in the spring game. We'll see. And obviously, you know, Brian Kelly mentioned they can't really say anything about Gabriel Relaford until he gets more reps versus Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Now, if he, you know, in the fall starts tearing it up against those guys, then he needs to play. And then obviously, Devon Godchow. Dominic McKinley is going to be a big part of what LSU is going to do next year. You know, I'm going through, and this will be released on Patreon. It takes a lot of time. I'm giving my grades on all the fall enrollees. And I'm trying not to get too high on Dominic McKinley because my initial grade on him is a year two grade. But he's going to play a lot this next year. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's year one Mason Smith good. So if that's the case, the expectations of LSU goes up. It just does. So there you go. Now, here's what you're going to do. This hour flew by. I don't know if I want to only do an hour. I normally try to keep it that way on Wednesdays. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I will answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you do Super Chat, we'll keep it going. I understand I'm the football guy, but I want to shout Jay Johnson out. Got another commitment. The Dayton Flyers catcher, who has a ton of power apparently, has committed to LSU. Really excited about that. Big shout out to Jay Johnson. Let's see. Is there anything else LSU related? I feel like I'm missing something. What am I missing? I didn't do an outline today. Did not do an outline. Oh, we talked about Carius Kern. Yeah, this is going to be a really good thing for LSU tomorrow. So he's an offensive lineman. He's probably going to commit to LSU tomorrow. And I'm really excited. I really am. Out of Arkansas and Marion, and the kid is very athletic. And LSU's offensive line class, Tyler Miller, the kid out of Calvary Baptist. I mean, this offensive line class is going to be pretty good again for LSU. I mean, it's amazing what Brian Kelly's done. It really is. And Brad Davis as well. Big, big, big day tomorrow for LSU Tigers fans. And once again, the position that matters the most when it comes to high school football recruiting is the offensive line. Okay. This is what I wanted to get to. I have had a few messages on Bryce Underwood not competing in the Elite 11. Obviously, the Elite 11 would have loved to have had him. Is that a sign that Bryce Underwood does not want to compete? No. He only has everything to lose by going out there in an underwear Olympic setting. I don't think he really has anything to gain. You know, Arch Manning wasn't in it either. Now, I don't know if he didn't make it or whatever, but I don't know. I have always kind of gone back and forth on Elite 11 stuff. You know, last year I started to do this. It was just going to take too much time. But what was interesting when I started looking into like the Elite 11 stuff is how many times they would pick the Elite 11 quarterbacks, but the quarterbacks who didn't make the Elite 11 would outperform the ones who did. Now, I will also say this. The evaluators on all levels have gotten better. They have gotten way better. The people who evaluate Elite 11, gotten better. 247, better. On3, better. Rivals, better. They have all gotten better at picking who the best players are. But, for instance, like, Joe Burrow went through the Elite 11 trials, didn't make the Elite 11. Lamar Jackson went through the Elite 11 trials, didn't make the Elite 11. Patrick Mahomes went through the Elite 11 trials, didn't make the Elite 11. So, it's obviously not a barometer of if you're going to be a good quarterback or not. Would I like to have seen him out there? Sure. There's always a piece of me that loves to see any LSU Tigers show out. I will say, the Texas A&M kid that's committed has made the most noise so far, according to my sources, boots on the ground. Bullfrog, have we talked about PJ Woodland? I don't think he'll start week one. Bryce showed all he needed in Orlando. True. True. I will also tell you this. One guy who had a really good Elite 11 last year for LSU was Colin Hurley. Really good.
So don't sleep on PHL friend of the channel, Colin Hurley. Now we'll take a few more here.
Big shout out once again. Ben, Cash App, Tari was our top super chatter of the evening. I think someone else is going to swoop in here pretty soon. Devin as well. It's been a good live stream. Man, y'all, estimate over lob for me, or labby. There's always just going to be some things that you can't unsee. And, you know, I was discussing this earlier today. So Josh Pate had this tweet. It said, if Dabo Swinney were to retire today, how would you view him? And, you know, when we're doing the Les Miles stuff, you know, a few people bring up Dabo with Les because of, you know, there's some similarities. But Dabo Swinney is so good. Like, even if, you know, he's anti-portal and he gets phased out, this run he was on was ridiculous, right? Like, what he did at Clemson was ridiculous. Abso-freaking-lutely ridiculous. There's just no other way around it. Like, I can't get over how, like for instance, here's a good example of this. Which team challenged 2019 LSU the most? Well, the answer is Auburn, right? Auburn really pushed 2019 LSU to the limit. But the second team would have to be Clemson, right? Like, they're up 17-7. They dropped a potential pick six to give them the lead. And, you know, we just made some superhuman plays to eventually pull away in that game. I mean, that game plan by Clemson was actually really good. Burrow and Chase just went nuclear. I mean, no team was beating 2019 LSU that year. And they beat probably the best team to never play in the national championship game, which was that Ohio State team. That Ohio State team was loaded, right? I just got to be real, man. Why did Clemson not win that game versus 2019 LSU? It's because Trevor Lawrence stunk. He stunk. And like, I will always think Trevor Lawrence is good. I always think Trevor Lawrence is supremely talented. Uh, But man, I just don't know if he's an elite quarterback. I just don't. And I've not really drafted him a whole lot in fantasy. And I know that that might hurt me in the long run because they did get our guy BTJ. But I just can't. I don't know. It's just one of those things I can't unsee. And I know that was a national championship game, but there's just been too many games where I see Trevor Lawrence and I'm like, I don't know. But there you go. We'll be live tomorrow night, 8:15 Central. And we'll see you there. It is! Pow. Out. LSU. Boom! And tonight, we are doing some crawfish pasta. Let's freaking go. Huh?